thought for today. A wonderful, wonderful thought for today. Never esteem anything as an advantage to you that will make you break your word or lose your self-respect. Marcus Aurelius. Never esteem anything as of advantage to you that will make you break your word or lose your self-respect. Never esteem anything as an advantage to you that will make you break your word or lose your self-respect. Those are some pretty powerful words. We are all encouraged to do things because it's expedient and it's convenient and it's helpful to us to accomplish a particular goal we have in mind. The policeman comes up behind you and says, "You were speeding." You say, "Oh, was I?" Or, "No, I wasn't." Or, "How could I have been speeding? I was just going with all the other cars were going." And the policeman says, "You were speeding." And you protest and continue to lie. You know you were speeding, even if it was 1 mile over the limit. You know it. And yet, you put your entire life on the line for that one possibility of getting away with a speeding ticket. It reminds us of our poker-playing friend that we were reading about yesterday. He was playing poker, and he was accidentally given the winning hand, even though he didn't have the winning hand. And he knew he didn't have the winning hand. He knew the other fellow had, but the judge gave it to him. And he took the winnings. And he went to his room, and he felt very sad about it. Sure took him a long time to act on it. And then, after he acted upon it, then he went to the fellow and apologized. Did he give the man the winnings back? Did he give him the points back? Did he give him the self-esteem back? The man must have thought, "Hey, that is pretty rotten. That judge is pretty rotten. He's pretty terrible, giving this other man my winning." Now, you see, when we break our word or lose our self-respect by lying or doing anything else, its ramifications are not just simple to us. We cannot go and apologize to ourselves. We cannot go and apologize to others. What was done to Odahi, no one can go and apologize to Odahi and bring him back to life, can they? If the world were to proclaim that Odahi was innocent of any wrongdoing at any time, would that bring him back to life? Would that give him the opportunity to be himself again? Now, true, there are many more ramifications to this than appear on the surface. And we are talking here about principle as far as it concerns us, not others. Have you ever carried a malicious word about another person that you thought was true and later found out was not true? Have you ever said an unkind remark to somebody that you thought they deserved and then you found out that it wasn't they who deserved it, but the people who told you about it? Have you ever misused your self-respect? Have you ever said to yourself, "I didn't hear something," when you heard it quite clearly, but you just didn't want to be responsible for knowing what it was said and acting upon what was said? We all do that occasionally. It's called a deaf ear, a blind eye. We have a blind eye to truth. We have a deaf ear to information that we hear, to things that we hear, because we don't want to hear certain things. Well, it is better, much, much better, not to hear it. Not to say that we don't hear it, but not to hear it. It is much, much better not to see it. Not to say that we don't see it, but just not to see it. If you are so pure in your heart and in your mind that everything you see is beautiful and good, you won't see something that is not pure. You won't see something that is evil or good or bad or indifferent. You will just see all as it is, with no judgment. See, judgment is a very harsh thing in everyone's life. Judgment makes us make decisions that are not really beneficial for ourselves or anybody else. Now, just because a little child makes a mistake as it is growing up, do we hold that against him and say, "You always fall down. You always spill your food. You always do this." You know, we don't do that. And it's a very wonderful blessing we don't. But when an older person does it, do we have the same forgiveness, if you will, or forgetfulness about it? When a woman drops a plate, and then the next day she drops a plate, and then the next day she drops something else, we call it, well, she has dropsy, you know. She's, what's the word for that? She has this ability to have accidents, or accident prone, that's the word. She's accident prone. We label someone that way just because of a few incidents. How do we know that each of those incidents might have been a normal, ordinary thing? She might have picked up the stuff from the sink and it was soapy and it slipped out of her hands. She might have done some other thing that was easily just as bad. We always get after Ilse. Ilse tries to unload everything from the table at one time. She gathers it up in her arms, the cups, the saucers, the plates and everything, and she drops things. And we say, "Ilse, take only what you can comfortably handle." We don't say, "Ilse, you are accident prone, and therefore you should not do that." That's silly. We don't do that. We just say, "Ilse, pick up only what you can comfortably handle." And Ilse picks up only what she can comfortably handle, and then never drops anything. You see, it has nothing to do with being accident prone, although we might like to give her that word about herself because she drops a few things. But that's not the reason. She drops it because she is careless, not because she's accident prone. She's careless in picking up too many things at one time. Now, we can also point fingers around here, can't we? In the beginning, you girls were always picking up as many things as you could from the table, and there were knives and forks in between, and the plates never settled properly on top of each other. Instead of taking the knives and forks and spoons and setting them aside, putting the plates on top of each other, and putting the knives and forks and spoons on top of it to have a steady load, you just sort of cluck, 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 cluck. And I said, "Don't do that. Don't do that. I give you the finest cutlery, the finest glassware, the finest of everything to use, because I believe in you." And then you put it in the washing machine and are careless about that, and the dishwasher smashes them up. But that's carelessness too. That's carelessness too. We have to be very careful about everything we do, because you come to me with an excuse after you have done something when no excuse is acceptable. No excuse is acceptable for carelessness. And we lose our word and our self-respect when we make excuses for things that we do which show that we just did not use our head. We did not use the wisdom we have within us. Now, if you were a little child and you would drop a plate because you didn't know how to hold it, that'd be one thing. But if you were a little child and your mother taught you carefully, "Now take two hands, one on each side of the plate, carry it carefully over the table, put it up carefully on the table, put it in Daddy's place, put it in Mommy's place." Oh, you are so wonderful. You are so careful. But we're not taught that as children. We're told to be careful. We're told to do these things quickly and so forth. But we're not taught with the gentleness of a real mother who says, "Now let's do this perfectly. I'm so proud of you. You do everything so right." The kid makes mistakes right and left, and the mother persistently says, "I'm so proud of you. You do everything carefully." Little by little, the child will do everything carefully. But you see, we have to build up respect within those who we are teaching and those we are working with. We have to build up the confidence in their word. And the confidence in your word comes only by practice. If you tell me you will be there. Now, they joked in a little article. They said, if you have a tendency to be late, and you call someone and you say, I'm going to be late, tell them you're going to be late plus, so that when you arrive late minus, you know, not as late as you said you're going to be, then they'll say, oh, you're here early, how wonderful, you know, whereas actually you were late all the time. There's no call for that, is there? There's no call for that. Now, you say, well, Herb, if there's no call for that, why do you come late for breakfast and late for meals sometimes? Why do you come just a few minutes after, or maybe 5 minutes after, we're supposed to start eating? And the answer for that is very simple, isn't it? The answer for that is that I sit here waiting for the time to pass, so I will be late, so I will come over, and you will not be touched by my being late. I could be on time, I could be over there for a half hour earlier, and be in your way as you're trying to set the table and make the breakfast or make the meals. But I stay away, purposely. And I stay away purposely longer. It's not an accident. I'm not, I am a very prompt person. When I am going to start a lecture, I'm there right on time. When I'm going to give seminars, I'm there right on time. I'm there ahead of time, because I believe that the people who come there expecting me to be on time deserve to have me be on time. And of course, I expect the same thing from the people who come there. The seminar starts at 8 a.m. They should be there at 7:45. Now, if there's money involved, that's a little different. And even then, it's not too different. The airlines say, be there 2 hours early. Now, what are you going to do? Sit around the airport for 2 hours? Well, you take a book along and you entertain yourself or do whatever you're going to do. But are you there usually ahead of time? Very few people are late at the airlines. Every flight has maybe 4 or 5 people who are late. But the majority of the 100-some people are there on time, aren't they? Now, why are they there on time? Because they invested money in that. And they want to get their value out of it. They don't want to be late. They want to get the best seat possible if they haven't already made arrangements for one. Now, you see, that's where you got money invested. Now, if I would invest money with each one of you, and I'd say, okay, I'm going to give each one of you $5 if you are not disturbed by my coming late. When I come late, any one of you who is not disturbed, I'm going to give $5. And any one of you who is disturbed by my coming late, who thinks, well, you know, who does he think he is, and stuff like that, I'm going to charge you $10. And say, I'm just going to take bookkeeping to take care of this. Now, how long is it going to take you to not be disturbed by my coming late? Not too long. I mean, you know, you can get in debt real quick in a hurry, but not too long. Because there's money involved. Now, it should be something more than money. It should be our integrity that's involved. When I tell you that I am coming late on purpose, I tell you that I'm coming late because I want to see if I can irritate you, make you unhappy, make you sad, make you feel mad about me being late, and then I come and some of you are unhappy, some of you are mad, and I have just got done telling you what I'm doing. I tell you so many times in so many ways about the different projects I'm working with you on, and you still fall in the trap. Like Katrina says, I tell you too much. I tell you too many things. I give you too much fair warning. Yes. Never esteem anything as an advantage to you that will make you break your word or lose your self-respect. We all have done many things in our life that have made us break our word. I've given you the simple illustration, the really very unimportant illustration, that you have agreed to wash my windows, remember? And you said you were going to be over at 9 o'clock on Wednesday to wash my windows. Well, at 8:30, you got a telephone call from the bank, and the bank said, if you can be here, what is it, 7:30? So 8 o'clock. So if you could be here by 8 o'clock, you can pick up your winnings of the sweepstakes of $10 million. Now, would you uphold your word of coming to wash my windows, something so terribly unimportant, or would you go and pick up the $10 million? Well, now you say, my God, Herb, there's no doubt about it. Any person in their right mind would go to pick up the $10 million. And if necessary, you can have $1 million, you know. To let me off the hook? I'm not letting you off the hook. I haven't got you on the hook. You have yourself on the hook. You are the one, it's your word that you're violating, not my word. I didn't ask you to come at 8. I didn't ask you to come wash my windows. You said you wanted to come wash my windows and you'd be over at 8 o'clock to do it. I didn't set those rules. You did it yourself. And then this opportunity for you to stand by your word comes into your life, and you say, well, God, Herb, $10 million, you know, is $10 million worth your word? Is it worth your self-respect? You know, they tell the story about the woman. She's offered $5 to go to bed with this guy. She says, what do you think I am? Then she's offered 50 or 100. She says, no. And then she's offered 1,000. She says, what? And then she's offered 5,000. She said, all right. It's just a matter of her integrity, her word, whatever it might be, was worth so much money. And you see, we all do this. We all do this. We sell our word. We sell our self-respect. We sell it for a pittance. $10 million? But Herb, you know, if you did not wash the windows and got the $10 million, the $10 million would be like an ulcer in your stomach, and it would just burn a hole in your stomach and make you feel very unhappy. I guarantee you. You might think, I can handle that, you know. That's just washing windows. That's no big deal. Well, it is a big deal. It's a very big deal. It's not the washing the windows. It's your word. And your word is so tremendously important under all circumstances. Under all circumstances. Always tell the truth. Well, Herb, look what happened to you when you told the truth. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Was there something sad that happened? Well, maybe. But you see, different people were involved in that thing more than ever any of you will know. And there were statements made ahead of time about certain things that were going to happen that didn't happen. And so this had to take place. It had to take place. You say, well, what happened? That doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. It involved different people. And so therefore, it created me not being able to come. This did not have to be on that document. It did not have to be there for me to have to say yes to it. It did not have to be there. In fact, probably a million people would never have noticed it. But it was there. And you see, it wouldn't have mattered if I answered yes or no. No one would have cared. It wouldn't have made any difference to anything, but it did to me. It did to my personal integrity. And you say, man, Herb, you sure have some personal integrity. No. You see, when you believe in yourself, I have a good imagination. I have a very creative imagination. I can tell stories that you just, you know, don't stop. And I can make them sound real, real, real and good, but you always know the stories. You always know that I'm telling a story. But when it comes to telling the truth and standing up for principle, that is what I teach as being sacrosanct. Not because God wants you to tell the truth. Not because there is a truth to tell, but only because do you think that it is truth? Is it your word? Now you say, I'm going to be over to your house at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. But you know that somebody's going to set fire to that house at 5 o'clock in the morning. And that house won't be there. But yet you say, I'll be there at 8 o'clock. And so you come over there and the house is burned down. And I say, Herb, what's all that about? You can have prior knowledge to something. But when you make a commitment to do something, you do it, even though the prior knowledge might have the conditions be totally changed. You always follow your word. You always follow your personal integrity. You always follow that which leads to your self-respect. That is tremendously important. When you live according to your self-respect, you will be the most successful, delightful, charming, wonderful, happy person on the face of the earth, because you will be living in harmony with the rules of humanity, with the rules of divinity. Okay? If you're living with the rules of humanity and with the rules of divinity, and they are not really what you want to live by, then what do? Say, for instance, you're living in a Polynesian culture, and they worship the Pele, the god of thunder, the god of the mountain, and so forth. And they're worshiping the volcanic action and so forth. And they're saying it's the will of God and all that sort of thing. And you are a particularly exquisite scientist. Maybe you are a Pelean. Maybe you are a person from the South Sea Islands. Maybe you were sent to school in some foreign country where you learned chemistry and geology and all of these wonderful things of physics. And you learned that a mountain's action and the action of the volcanic strata beneath the subsurface of the ground all act in a very definite way. And wherever there are weak spots on the surface of the earth, that's where the volcanic action tends to come up. And if the volcanic action is currently active and the volcano shoots out every once in a while, then it could shoot out at any given moment. And it has nothing to do with the will of God or anything. It is the natural activity of the volcanic action within the soil. Now, of course, you could use your prayer power, your mental power, your awareness power, your creative power, to create that volcano extinct. You could easily do that. You could easily create that mentally by saying the walls of the volcano cave in on the volcano just as it's about to blow up because they have been weakened. And so they fall in and they seal the volcano and the volcano is no longer active. Oh, Herb, that's a far-fetched thing. That's a way-out thing. How can you say something like that? Easy. We're the creators of our world. We don't have to believe it's the will of God that the volcano, perhaps it is the will of God, if we consider that each person is God and the priests are God working on this volcano to erupt in certain ways and scare the people or bless the people or do whatever. You see, if that culture, if that philosophy, if that teaching is foreign to our awareness, we go where the teaching is not foreign to our awareness, unless we don't mind being there. But we live up to the culture that we're in. The culture we're in reflects who we are. Now, why would a person be born in that culture where the God was the volcano, unless that person wanted to really believe it? You see, in the back of their mind, if the back of their mind exists, in their mind is the belief that the volcano is an act of God. And these people believe that. And now, if they go elsewhere and they happen to be at the foot of a volcano, say in Mexico, coming in from the Polynesian Islands, and here this volcano in Mexico is about ready to erupt, Their first thought is God is causing that volcano to erupt, because that's how they've been trained. Their first thought is that, even though they've gone to college, even though they've learned physics, chemistry, and all of these other geological formation activities, they've learned all that. But their first thought is immediately going back to what their belief structure is, regardless of their intellectual awareness of this. Their emotional belief structure is what guides them, directs them, and controls them. So what is it for us now? What is your belief structure about your word? What is your belief structure about your self-respect? Is your self-respect so weak that $10 million could make you violate a promise that you made?
Maybe.
You know? Is your belief structure so weak that you would fear your own life while you're trying to save another? If you were holding a rope over a cliff and your child were on the end of that rope, and all of a sudden there was an earthquake too, and the earth was trembling under your feet, and you were losing ground and you were going to fall in after your child, would you drop the rope and run away? Or would you hold all the more fiercely to the rope so that your child would have a chance if the earthquake stopped, or if you know, you didn't fall in? What would you do? Well, where is your, if I use this word improperly, where is your courage? Where is your courage? Is your courage to do something that's ingrown and in embedded in you to save your child, to save any child, to save any person, at even the cost of your own life? Or is it embedded in you, hey, that's somebody else's problem. My son got himself in that. Too bad, son. Goodbye. You see, every one of you got a frown on your face when you think of that thought. But think about it. What would you do for yourself? Where would you stand in that? Where is your integrity? Where's your self-respect? Where's the conditions under which you have been brought up that taught you values and taught you purpose in life? Think about that. Now, I say $10 million and you say, well, I'm washing windows and $10 million. You know, it's not washing windows and $10 million. It is integrity. It is your word. It is your word. So many people have given me their word over the past 15 years or something like that, and their word meant nothing, because when the going got tough, they just ran away, disappeared. Now, I don't hate them. I don't dislike them. I understand them 100%. I love them with all my heart, and I would that they could find it within themselves. But they cannot live harmoniously with themselves because they've broken their word. I didn't ask them to make that word. You understand that? I didn't ask them to vow that they would stand by me and do these things. I didn't ask them to do this. They did it of their own accord. But it's like the man who is out in the ocean on a life raft. He says, oh God, if I will just be saved, if I'll just be saved, I'll go to church every Sunday and I'll help in the church and I'll help you, God. If I could just be saved, I'll help God. You know, if I'll help God. And so he's saved. And a ship comes along, picks him up, takes him back to shore. And the first Sunday he's at shore, forgot all about this promise of going to church. Forgot all about these things. And then years go by. And things get tough again. Some terrible situation comes along. And he says, oh God, if you could just solve this, I'll go to church every Sunday, I'll do this. And all of a sudden, in his heart comes this broken promise. And he feels terribly bad. Terribly bad. And other broken promises come to mind. And he feels very bad. Never esteem anything as an advantage to you that will make you break your word or lose your self-respect. Never esteem anything as an advantage to you that will make you break your word or lose your self-respect. Never esteem anything as an advantage to you that will make you break your word or lose your self-respect. You're not doing it for me, for the world around you, for anything, just for yourself. Because most of the people don't even know that we have given our word, because we give it within ourselves. No, most people don't even know that we have broken our self-respect. Because a lot of people do that. I love you.